Welcome to the Affordable Freedom Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Hune. Our mission is to help you gain your freedom from the exhausting, never-ending corporate rat race. Because time is our most valuable asset. And life's just too short to do work we hate. Thanks for slowing down. All right, welcome to the Affordable Freedom Podcast, everyone. Today, my guest is Brittany Young. Brittany has an extensive background in sales, both in the chemical and pharmaceutical industries. And in 2017, she made a career pivot to become an executive leadership coach, where she specializes in helping female financial advisors to increase their sales and have more fun along the way. And she's got a process that she's put together to help advisors do this, which is called the permission process. And we'll get into that a little bit here in the conversation today. But Brittany, thanks for coming on today. I'm excited to have this conversation.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be here, Brian. Thanks for having me on as a guest. I know that I was bugging you in the comments to make that happen on LinkedIn. So I'm really excited to be here.
Well, that's the magic of LinkedIn, is the relationships that you can establish there. So I've enjoyed getting to know you, and I'm excited to have this conversation. So first, let's dive in and just talk a little bit about, you've got this extensive background in sales. So you've learned a lot. You have, you know, proven methodologies that work and help people increase their sales. And now you're applying that specifically to financial advisors, and even more specifically to female financial advisors. So when you decided to make that pivot in 2017, I'm curious if you can just talk a little bit about what drove that for you.
Sure. I began to really study different markets, pharmaceuticals, chemicals, and financial. And one of the biggest things that I started to see was a huge gap in the financial industry. Having worked in chemicals and pharmaceuticals, I wasn't just the only woman that was selling. There was a bunch of us as sales reps, especially in pharma. But when it came to finance, the financial industry for women hasn't grown in over a decade. And I started reading why that was, why women were almost intimidated to go into this industry. So I thought it was really interesting. And then I did some market research. I got on calls with financial advisors who were either running their own firms as women or working for, you know, really large firms. And they would say, yeah, I'm not doing as well as my counterparts. I don't know why that is. I'm really struggling. It's been really difficult. And then they would hear things like, well, I prefer to have a male advisor, or I just feel more comfortable with a man managing my finances. Really, just very interesting data, and also not okay. How do we shift this? Because this is a huge gap. And how do we give more women the freedom to feel like they can sell while also being themselves? And so I started talking about how in the industry in particular, it's been run by gray suits, white hair, and that's been, you know, the last 30, 40 years, and one woman in a pink suit. Or she stands out because she's wearing heels, whatever the case may be, but she's stuck around. So there's a reason why she's stuck around. Her voice was heard. People respected her and listened to her. So might as well interview her and find out why. And what I found out was that she figured out the game of building relationships very early on. And she did that by forming emotional connections with her clients and her prospects. So the permission process for me got birthed through that conversation with that particular woman around how emotions are so important in the sales process, because money is emotional, sales is emotional. So if women can start to tie emotions, empathy, trust, safety back into the sales process, it's going to help them sell even better. And then it makes it more fun because they can use that empathy to connect with other people or build a referral base or, you know, gain a client's trust if the client's on the fence of whether or not they want to hire them specifically as their advisor. And throughout that process, being able to ask other advisors, hey, does this make sense to you? Whether I'm writing content or having conversations at a networking event, would this be of interest to you? And 9 times out of 10, women would say, absolutely. I find that if I am building a relationship based on emotion, I win, rather than just basing it on context and saying, here's the financial analysis report. What do you want to do with it? Mm-hmm. So we can take the logic, we can blend it with emotional strategy, and we can create an increase in your revenue and your sales by doing that.
So you bring up such a good point there about money being emotional. You know, I just say money in general is such an emotional thing. It touches every aspect of our life. It evokes fear, it evokes greed, all those things that you always hear about when it comes to like investing. And so one thing I found interesting that you said is that people have said that they tend to feel more comfortable with a male financial advisor because there's studies out there, lots of studies, and you've probably seen them, Brittany, where it shows that women are actually more successful as investors than men are because they're actually able to control their emotions a little bit more and not make emotional financial decisions. So I think that's kind of interesting that anyone would make a comment like that. So again, like I said, there's stats out there. Have you noticed that at all, like anecdotally, or had conversations like this with the clients that you're working with?
100%. It depends on the advisor. And it depends on how they connect with that investor. But it depends too on if me personally, we have a female financial advisor and I connected with her over our dads. So it had nothing to do with money. It had everything to do with the relationship with our fathers. And what I found actually, Brian, this is really interesting, is most of my clients that have come to me that are financial advisors have worked for their dads in some capacity, whether they were in his practice or they were working for him in a previous position and then switched over to financial advisory. With women investors, and when clients say, yeah, you know, 95% of the time, I see that women are more motivated to invest with me than the husband. And it's because they're building that connection with them. The husband's just kind of sitting there, taking it all in, taking notes. But what I often hear is the wife makes all the decisions. The wife is the one that's driving the bus. She's, you know, finding the advisor. She's making the decision. And obviously the husband and the wife compromise and they say, you know, this is what works best for us. But it's almost as if she's the one that is making all of the plans and making it happen. And so I don't know if that's true for every couple, especially in the space of investment, but that's what I hear from clients often. You know, you sit down with your wife and she's like, I found this person. We're going to go with them. All I need you to do is just show up. And I find that really interesting because I did that with my husband too, of like, hey, found this advisor. We're going to buy life insurance through her. She's fantastic. She knows all this knowledge. Here's what we're going to do. And all I needed to hear was a yes. And that was it.
Yeah, I've certainly noticed with, you know, the clients that I've worked with through the years and the clients that I'm working with today that when there is that, you know, human to human connection, like a real human connection, and you're sharing emotions with one another, that just helps to build the trust. And then that trust helps people to stick with their plans, which tends to help people become more successful. And so I really do think having that emotional connection is kind of at the core of being able to give good financial advice. I'd like, Brittany, if you could, to go into a little bit more detail on the permission process that you talked about. So, like, what does that look like? What are sort of the key, the key insights behind it, and how do you use that with your clients?
Sure. And I want to emphasize this because I didn't bring this up last time. The reason why I blend emotions into sales, especially in a male-dominated industry like finance, is because women, for a very long time, and it still occurs, feel like, well, I have to be one of the boys. So I have to do things like the men. I have to act like the man. I need to take on that energy of always doing like men, because men do good to feel good. But on the other side, women have to feel good to do good. So if we're not emotionally connected with ourselves, it's going to be really hard to connect on that deeper level with a client or in a relationship, whatever the case may be. So with the permission process, step one is really about emotional awareness and finding out where in the body are you blocked and why are you not able to feel an emotion of trust? Why are you blocking yourself from not feeling safe? Where is that showing up in your life? And then how is that affecting your business? And the reason I look at this is because if you can become emotionally aware of how you're feeling, it's only going to benefit you when you're selling. You'll be able to pick up on those emotional cues on a sales call or on a Zoom call, even if you're not face to face. So we start there. And I like to call it heart awareness being step one. And like I said earlier, you know, sales and money are emotional. So it's really important for us to notice our own emotions first. And then how is that impacting those that we're working with? Step two is what I like to call release. So how do we release those emotions, that core wound or that belief that you've been holding on to for decades, years? I'm not a therapist. I always recommend that clients have therapists. But as a coach and consultant, we're going to look at where's the emotion happening in your business right now? And how can you start to release that expectation? So for instance, I had a client who was really feeling abandoned in her childhood. Dad left when she was young, and that abandonment was showing up through people saying no on sales calls or people saying, this is great, I need to think about it, or I can't afford it right now. So when she figured out that it truly was abandonment and all the stories that were coming up around that, started to begin to let them go and surrender those stories because they weren't serving her. They were blocking her from increasing her revenue and increasing her conversion rate. So once she did, and once she figured that out, her sales skyrocketed. She increased, you know, her monthly revenue from 20K to 60K. And she's not in that place of abandonment anymore. If anything, feeling really safe around that relationship with her father. So it's helping her see the patterns in herself. And then when she's getting on a sales call, she starts to see the pattern in somebody else. Because in all honesty, we're a true mirror reflection of the clients that we work with. And so she started seeing abandonment in every one of her clients. and was able to pinpoint that and then work through that on a call or even through a financial advisory session with them, figure out why that was there. Maybe it was blocking them from investing in the stock market, or, you know, they wanted to buy a house, trying to figure out why that person was stopping themselves from buying that home, whatever, you know, the financial blockage that came up. So it's really interesting when we combine, you know, our emotions with sales. And then the last piece of the process is creation. Now, all of these three steps are interchangeable. You don't do one before you do the other, because some clients will come to me and say, I just want to work on creation of a new sales process or a new sales system for me and my team. So I like to intertwine the two, because if you do have a team, you need to be emotionally connected with them. That's important. And we need to build trust and safety with our teams as well. So how do we do that? Step three, we create or upgrade your actual sales process. Take you from just getting on a call to actually looking at, where are you pre-qualifying your clients? Are you doing, you know, social media content? Are people that are showing up to calls actually qualified leads? Are those the people that you want to be working with? Did you build rapport and connection with them prior to getting on a call? And then what are you asking them while you're on a sales call? What are the questions? Are those questions emotionally engaging? Or are they yes or no question? Are you noticing your tonality? Are you noticing the language that your clients are using? So that's the part of creation that I like to play in. And I find that when we give ourselves permission to explore our emotions and bring that into the sales process, they'll start to increase, and so does our revenue.
So I love all of that, you know, what you're saying. I think that's a very smart process to use. And I love how you talk about, you know, just being authentic and just kind of being unapologetically who you are and letting others know about that, because, you know, people are going to respond to that. And I think people are sick and tired of like corporate talk, like being talked to by corporations. They want to be talked to by another human being. So I love that. And we're going to dive into a little bit more about, you know, your background and how you've opened up about that. But before we do, you know, when you talk about that, the first step of this process of really understanding yourself emotionally, and, you know, that's obviously, like you said, it leads to a deeper connection, which develops trust, which then results in people that are more likely to buy from you. But also, I think, like, having that self-awareness, for me, it helps me to determine, am I actually selling something that aligns with my values? You know, and yeah. I think this process can apply not only to financial advisors, but salespeople everywhere. But when I started getting really introspective and reflecting on who I was emotionally and what my values were, I realized, like, I can't work for these companies that I'm working for. I need to start my own business to create something that I would actually use myself. So what do you say in that situation? Like, are there ways to just kind of stick with your employer and kind of do what you can do? Or does that usually result in, okay, I got to go somewhere else. I've got to find somewhere else that aligns better with my values.
It's so funny that you bring this up. I can't count the number of clients that have said to me, you have helped me, whether this is in working together or they graduate and it's years later. And they come back and they say, I started my own business because of that conversation we had or those sessions that we did around the fact that I don't need to work for anybody else. I'm giving myself permission to start something new. And it's because you helped me reflect on who I wanted to be. And it's not the person I want to show up in the workplace anymore. I want to be somebody different. And I had a financial advisor client who was at a crossroads make a decision to leave her father's financial firm and start her own. And I was holding her hand through that. And in the first year, it was really rocky. And all of the emotions from fear to, you know, scarcity to I need to go back to him. This is really not okay. All of that came up. So to be able to walk with that person through that journey was remarkable. To see her now, she has 9 advisors under her, all women. She started a multimedia company on the side. And so she's managing assets in the morning and managing TV shows and books and podcasts at night. And her firm is now valued at over $100 million. And so to be able to give yourself permission to say, you know what? I'm going to not only sell the way that I want, but I'm going to live authentically in the person that I'm made to be. And I'm going to show up authentically in every aspect of my life and be rigorously honest with who that person is. That's going to lead to way more success, however you define success, whether it's financial or, you know, your kids. I like to think of my child as my success. But that's going to lead to way more satisfaction than staying where you're at and feeling as if you have to go through the motions. But, you know, not to knock the 9-to-5, there's nothing wrong with it. All I'm trying to say is if you can give yourself permission to be authentically you and to show up in every aspect of yourself, then you're making a huge difference and you will impact somebody along the way.
Yeah, and it's not a knock on the 9-to-5 or working for a company at all, because like going through this process of self-discovery and figuring out what we value can maybe lead us to working for a company that aligns better. Like, so it doesn't necessarily mean you have to create your own thing. But wow, what a powerful story about she left her father's business. Like, what a hard thing to do. And then to have the level of success that she's having now. And I remember hearing once, I forget who it was that said it, but they talked about how like kind of when we're a baby, we're kind of like a brand new, you know, like iPhone or computer out of the box. And then over the years, all these other people, whether it's our parents, whether it's our school teachers, whether it's our friends, they all download all this crap onto us, you know, and it's not necessarily us, right? So sometimes you got to get to a point where you just do a factory reset, you know, and try to figure out what the best steps are moving forward. And it sounds like this person did, and she's a lot better off for it. So that's really cool to hear that.
Yeah. And she's leaving her own legacy. And I think, after countless conversations with advisors, that's something that comes up often is, what is the legacy that I want to leave? What does the succession plan look like after I'm gone? Who gets nominated to take over the business? And I think at that point in her life, she went, you know what? I don't want to take over his business. I want to leave my own. I want to leave my own mark on this world. Make such an impact that people remember my name, and whoever does take over when I'm gone, you know, it's going to succeed whether I like it or not, whether I'm, you know, 6 feet under or looking from above, right? So if you think about life that way and you start to look at the life that you're leading right now, what is that legacy? If you were to die tomorrow, what would you want to be remembered for? And it's kind of eerie, but at the same time, whenever I'm working with somebody, it's one of the very first questions I like to ask, because that gives me a really good indicator of where they're at in their life and where they want to take whatever it is that they're building to that next level.
All right. So Brittany, let's talk a little bit about, you know, just like breaking through that fear of putting yourself out there and really showing the world who you are, truly who you are. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I really admire about you is your willingness to do that. You know, it's not an easy thing to do, but you've talked very openly, very freely about your past with alcohol and how that led to a lot of struggle in your life and how that impacted your career and the life you're living today. So I was wondering if you could share with the listener just a little bit about your background from that perspective and how having the courage to share that has helped you to do what you're doing today.
Sure. I will start with the fact that I don't mind sharing about it because I think it helps at least the next person who might be struggling. And I think it's really important to not only tell the stories, but to see that somebody does recover, because we're often painted the picture, whether it's the media or on social or even in your family setting, that people don't recover from drugs or alcohol. And that's just simply not the case. There's plenty of us out there that actually do recover, and we live to tell the story. But my journey began when I was very young, as a teenager. I started drinking at 17. I had an incident that I won't get into that led to me feeling as if alcohol was the only way that I knew how to cope with that situation. And having been warned that I had the disease on both sides of the family, I couldn't stop it. And I took that first drink, and once it hit my lips, I knew I have a problem. And unfortunately, that problem lasted for a little over a decade. I drank through college. And then when I first got into corporate, I definitely knew, okay, I have an addiction here. I would go to the happy hours. I'd be the one closing out the bar tab, which, not okay at the age of 23 to be the last one there and saying goodbye to everybody at your first corporate job. Not okay. But I was a very high functioning alcoholic. I could work and drink on the weekends. And then those weekends turned into weekdays. And then the alcohol started turning into me drinking by myself. And it got so bad to the point where, you know, I had family members say, I need a break from you. I don't want to be around you. Friends disappearing or saying, we think you need to go to rehab or be intervened on, at least. Somebody needs to step in and do something about this. And I was constantly pushing people away. I did not want anyone to get in the way of me and this disease. And it got to the point where I had such a bad friendship with alcohol that I was blacking out. I, at one point, was vomiting blood. It got to that point. And I'll never forget going to the doctor for my annual checkup, and they never closed the door. It was a very free, open office, you know, open door policy, people coming in and out. It wasn't like everyone was listening to your business, but, you know, the nurse would come in, the doctor would come in, and doctor shut the door. And she said, I don't like what I'm seeing here. Are you heavily drinking? And I said, no, I'm not heavily drinking. What, you know, define heavy drinking. And she said, your white blood cells are through the roof. And you, it appears that you possibly have some stuff going on with your liver. You look yellow, so a little bit of jaundice. You don't look human at this point. And you might be at the early stages of what we like to call cirrhosis and liver failure. Hmm. My prediction is if you don't get this under control within the next 3 to 5 years, you won't ever come back to this office again because you'll be in a grave. So my suggestion is figure out how to stop drinking and come see me in 6 months and we'll retest, you know, where you're at. And I left that appointment just completely, not even devastated, but angry. Like, how dare this person say something to me about my drinking? But that wasn't even the kicker. The kicker was a week later getting fired from my corporate job because I've, you know, drank my progress into the ground. And then a week after that, having a conversation with my father and saying to him, I don't know how to stop. All I want to do is stop, but I just can't keep living like this. Somebody needs to help me. And he said, we've already exhausted all of our options. Everybody has exhausted their option. We just need you to stop. And I thought, how is that possible? How does one just quit drinking, right? And yet people do it every day. And they get their butts into rehab or meetings like AA, where they meet a fellowship group that helps them. So I went home one night after the bar, and it was like the universe just said, look, it's time. I think it's time for you to just quit. And I'll never forget it, Brian. I just lost it. I was hysterically crying at the edge of my bed and looking up to the sky and just saying, God, source, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to live. I don't want to die of liver disease. Please help me. And the next thing I knew, I was lifting up my laptop from the ground and I was Google searching how to get sober on your own. I came across this story of a guy that did just that. He was a CrossFitter and he came in dead mass in the CrossFit games. And it turns out he was a heroin addict. And his way of getting sober was locking himself in a room with just some bread and water. And 30 days later, came out of the room and said, I'm ready to go to rehab. He went to rehab for 90 days, lived in a sober home for over a year, got back into CrossFit and placed in the top three in the world. And he shared that story. He started an organization for people like himself and myself. And I thought, if that guy can kick heroin, I can kick alcohol. So I Googled the local CrossFit gym, got myself over to it, went down into this, you know, hallway, saw the guy at the front desk, introduced myself, let him know, hey, I've got 48 hours sober. I have no idea if I'm going to throw up on your floor or pass out. Please take it easy on me. I don't know how this is going to go. And he's just typing away. And all of a sudden he pauses, looks up at me and says, hi, I'm really glad that you're here. My name is Tim. And oh, by the way, I have 5 years of sobriety under my belt. And it's really nice to meet you. Let's get started and let's go work out. And that was the beginning of my recovery from alcohol.
Yeah, that's an amazing story that I can certainly relate to personally. I feel like from the ages of right around the same age, 17 or so, was when I started drinking a lot. And it went really all the way up until 35 when I had my son, my first child. And then things started to change a little bit. It's funny, I joke sometimes how the next decade after I graduated college was just an extension of the college days. Like, And it's just when you have this, you know, deep-seated anxiety and stress, and sometimes you can't put a finger on what's causing it. I really think that, I mean, you'll use anything to kind of numb that, right? Whether it's alcohol or something else, right? And I think this is a result of not doing step one of your process, of like living a life that's not truly in tune with who you are as a human being. Would you agree with that?
100%. 100%. I had this much emotional bandwidth for myself. I would not give myself the opportunity to feel. I decided to numb every aspect of my life because that was way more easy than to admit that I had a problem with the reality that I was creating deep within me, which was fear. Fear of everything. Fear of looking in the mirror and discovering who I truly was. And I think when we skip out on getting so emotionally connected with ourselves, we miss out on a lot of opportunities like this, even connecting with other people and putting yourself out there and unabashedly and being okay with people saying no or even saying yes to you. There's that deep rooted fear that I think a lot of people are still walking around with because they don't want to go down the path of what I like to call emotional sobriety.
Tell me more about that, emotional sobriety.
Emotional sobriety is really about getting rigorously honest with the emotions that you're feeling. And so instead of hiding them and numbing them and pushing them down with either work, substance abuse, gambling, sex, whatever the addiction, technology may be, can you see that emotion for what it is, identify it, get really honest with it, tell somebody else about it, right? If I came to this call to you and today I said, look, I'm feeling really anxious, can we talk about that on your show? You would be like, at least I hope you would say, yeah, sure, let's open up about it, right? That's getting rigorously honest and that's getting really emotionally aware of how can we start to come together in our connections through an emotional lens.
Yeah, I like that idea of emotional sobriety. This is the first time I've heard that. So thank you for sharing. That's a good concept.
Sure.
But it's like, yeah, if you're not sober, whether you're on drugs or you're on alcohol or whatever it is, you're disconnected from reality. And if you're not in tune with your emotions and your values, then you're disconnected from your reality. So you're essentially emotionally drunk at that point if you're not addressing these things. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it shows up in your business. So you have these high expectations of I'm going to sell and I'm going to sell really well, but that's not the reality. The reality is you're struggling with these deep-seated feelings and you're not able to empathize with a prospect or a client. So those expectations need to be lowered. And I think a lot of us get caught up in, well, what is reality? You know, what is that supposed to look like? I can't dictate that for you. You have to figure out what your reality is, but lower the bar a little bit. It's okay to take messy action and it's okay to have array of emotion as long as you understand, okay, if I have these things, I get to work through them. I don't have to push them down anymore. Actually taking a look at them benefits you in so many ways.
Yeah, I can't help but think of, you know, I remember hearing about this visual of thinking of yourself as this cup, right? And if your cup is overflowing, then you have more value to add to others. Like you're able to understand, you know, who you are and what your true value is. And once you understand that, then you can continue to work on maximizing that value. And then your cup starts overflowing and people are just attracted to that. And they want the value that you're able to provide.
100%.
So Brittany, you've talked before about, being comfortable with being outside of society's norms. And this all, I think, goes into what we're talking about being true to ourselves. But how do you define that, like being outside of society's norms? And what does that mean to you?
It's really interesting. To me, being kind of outside, like an outsider looking in, I think of it like a sheep herder, where you know, you have all these sheep and one is kind of out there grazing in the pasture and you're like, oh man, I really got to go get that sheep. They should be back with the herd. But then a wolf comes along and steals that sheep and takes it and eats it, right? The sheep, it wasn't paying attention to what was going on around it. It was in its own world, right? And I'm not telling people, hey, let's be delusional. Let's be in our own world. But that sheep had other plans. It didn't want to go with the herd. It wanted to eat more. It wanted to be free. It wanted to have a different life than be with the sheep herder and the crowd. So if we look at our life and we go, how am I different from everybody else? What makes me completely unique? What makes me stand out? And if you can start to pinpoint what that is, that's separating you from the herd. For me, I know what helps me stand out is sharing my stories about my struggles, whether it was a bad sale that I made and being able to talk about it, or an episode with drinking and not being afraid to mention it and share it on LinkedIn or tell it while I'm speaking on stage. If you can get really clear on how do I effectively communicate what makes me unique, that's how you're going to separate yourself from 99% of the herd. And I think as an advisor, what is so cool and unique about advisors is you have that opportunity to do just that. Any advisor can tell you how to make more money, you know, how to put your money and invest it into stocks, how to go and maximize your 401k. All of that's great. No one cares. What they care about is, who is Brian? How does Brian live? How does Brian treat his wife? How does Brian show up for his kids? And why is he special? Why would I want to choose working with Brian? And I think if we can get really clear and honest with what those values are and what makes us who we truly want to be and show up in this world, that's how we separate ourselves. That's how we're not a part of whatever everybody else is doing or saying or being. And it can be really lonely on the island sometimes, as I'm sure you've discovered being uniquely you. But you know what? There's so much beauty in it, because people start to flock to you and say, I want what you have. And we're all different. So you can't have what I have. You get to have what you have. And that's why, you know, I named the process about permission, because I can't give you permission to be Brian. You have to give permission to Brian to be Brian. Mm-hmm. And I'll end my comment on this. It's always going to be you versus you. So if you're feeling like you're on the island, well, how do you get off of it? How do you create so much value in yourself that you don't feel like you're on that island anymore, and that you can reintegrate into society and bring that beauty, that uniqueness back to everybody else and deliver it and be able to effectively communicate it?
Yeah. It's like taking that step to stand out. It's a form of leadership. You know, you hear about all the time, you know, oh, this person resonates with me because they're saying all the things that people are thinking and afraid to say, right? And if you're that person who is not afraid to break from the flock and do your own thing, it's the same thing. There's going to be a lot of people saying, oh my God, I want to do that. Like, I've been wanting to do that for a long time, and somebody else is doing it. So that encourages others. So I love that. And I also love what you're talking about with sharing struggles, you know, not only about life, but also about business. And I think particularly with financial advisors, we tend to, and I don't know if, you know, clients are necessarily doing this to us or if it's like us doing it to ourselves, but there's like this pressure to be the expert, like the all-knowing, like, I'm the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain. I've got all the financial expertise and I need to tell you what to do. Right. But man, when I've talked to clients and said, here's a bunch of really bad decisions I've made in the past, and I want you to learn from those so that you can have a better outcome than I did and be farther mm-hmm. ahead of where I am at this point in my life, you know, if, particularly exactly. like if it's a younger client. So yeah, I think that's really cool. And I enjoy this conversation. So we'll have to keep in touch and maybe we'll do another one in the future. But in the meantime, Brittany, if people want to connect with you and just follow along, what's the best way to do that?
I would say LinkedIn is the best way to do that. I have flames around my name, so I'm very easy to find on LinkedIn. And I love that platform. It's such an easy way to connect. You know, feel free to DM me, check out the content I have going on. I think you'll definitely resonate with, especially the stories around struggle. You know what, Brian, I think people, the more that they do share their struggles, and I love that you share that with your client, we all grow from that. You grow from that. Your clients grow from that. And guess what? People want to stick around you because you're not somebody that just made it. And that's what makes you, again, uniquely yourself. If you look at somebody like Michael Jordan, he didn't make it until he retired. He got the championships. Yeah, that's all well and good. But then he got that big, huge endorsement from Nike, and it lives on forever. So he made it once he said goodbye to the game. And, you know, now he's in the shadows, some multi-billionaire in the shadows. He's got a basketball team that he owns. But he was on the island for so long, and there was always a target on his back. And now that that's not there, he gets to leave his legacy, gets to live his life. We actually share the same birthday, he and I. And, you know, he's somebody that I continue to admire because he shared his struggles. He shared everything. He put everything out there. And now he can look back at his life and go, I'm a great person. I don't have to worry about what I did wrong or even what I did right, because I was great and I'm still great and I show up in greatness. And I think that's what I want to leave people with today is, how do you show up in your greatness? How can you continue to do that every single day?
Yes. Don't be afraid to be great. It's something that a lot of us are afraid to do, but don't be afraid. Brittany, thanks a lot. It was a great conversation, and we'll talk again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening today. And if you have a moment, check out my website at reflectivewealth.com. Everything you need to know about my business is there. Because if there's one thing I've learned in my career, transparency and accountability are critical to a healthy financial services industry. Thanks, and see you next time.